10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you live from Bridgestone Arena. Predators, Flames tonight at 7, pregame at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. But joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, college football editor of The Athletic, Mitch Light, kind enough to join us on a Tuesday. Mitch, we finally have the college football playoff bracket. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. When you scan the field, which team, in your opinion, got the best draw, the best path to a potential championship game appearance, and which team might have gotten shafted a little bit in their draw on their way to the title?
Well, the way things shake out now with the injury situation at Georgia, I would say Penn State has a, you know, especially for a team that did not receive a bye. I mean, Oregon would be a good answer because they're the number one seed and they have a bye, but that's the boring answer. So I'll say Penn State have to beat SMU at home, Boise State in a neutral field, and then potentially Georgia with its backup quarterback or Notre Dame or Indiana. So I would say Penn State, especially the way they played in the Big Ten championship game, obviously they lost the game. They gave up a lot of points, but they showed some toughness, came back, and, you know, made a lot of plays when it looked like the game was going to get away from them. So I would think they would feel pretty good about their draw. Conversely, I would say, you know, Tennessee probably not in love with the way things worked out, have to go to Ohio State. I know it's not a vintage Ohio State team, but still traveling up to Columbus and then get the number one seed after that. And then after that, it might be Texas, who, again, we've seen them struggle, but one of the most talented teams in the country.
So Alabama athletic director Greg Byrne took to social media the other day after Alabama was left out of the field. And I understand he's biased, to put it lightly. And yeah. I thought he said something interesting. He wrote, quote, "We have said that we would need to see how strength of schedule would be evaluated by the CFP. With this outcome, we will need to assess how many P4 non-conference games make sense in the future to put us in the best position to participate in the CFP. That is not good for college football." Does Greg Byrne have a point, or is this just sour grapes?
No, I think – no. This is not an original thought. I mean, they did not get in because they lost to 2-6-6 teams in the SEC. Had they lost at Wisconsin and had a better SEC record, then I still think it's sour grapes, but the point is more valid. They played a bad Wisconsin team that went 5-7. They played a South Florida team that just had to scrape to get to bowl eligibility. They beat Western Kentucky 63-0, and they beat Mercer. So I really do not understand all of the belly aching. I don't think I've used that term in a long time. Belly aching from SEC fans, SEC country, about strength of schedule and all that stuff. When again, it was Alabama losing to 2-6-6 teams.
But Mitch, wouldn't we say that is counteractive to the way the basketball tournament committee makes their selections, where strength of schedule is everything? They don't worry about the one loss record, yeah, of a 17-12. But it should be the same principle to some degree, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should.
Because I could argue that at Oklahoma and this year's Vanderbilt team, yeah, they're 6-6, but that's in the SEC, and the strength of the SEC is the depth of the league. So that's not just any 6-6 team.
I agree. But as I was about to say, I think it was also a unique set of circumstances. Okay, I'll go back to my original thought. It's a different sport. I completely agree with you. There's fewer games of importance in basketball. There's far more data points in college football. There's fewer. I don't know if I'm making my point or contradicting my point, but there is differences in the two sports. And I will say, I think it was a unique set of circumstances where in future years, if it's a three-loss Alabama team with a similar resume versus a two-loss ACC team, that the SEC team would get it. I think really, and I'm not in that room, and as I always say, there's 13 people with 13 opinions, but I think what it came down to is SMU losing in the championship game and the committee not wanting to penalize them for a good showing. I think if, 24-7 in the first, late in the second quarter, or whatever it was, if SMU got run off the field, Alabama would be in, but I think personally it came down to them losing close in the championship game and setting a precedent about penalizing a team for reaching its championship game and playing a 13th game.
We talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing the college football playoffs. Now, Mitch, of these first-round games, which one would you consider would be an upset? I know we can look at the Texas and Clemson, but Clemson started to play a lot better after their loss to Georgia. So you could possibly look at that one. But out of the, you know, four games that would be played, which one do you believe would be the biggest upset?
I'm going to contradict what I said earlier about Penn State having a terrible draw and pick SMU. I had to make picks. You know, when you're doing your brackets in the NCAA, you don't want to pick all favorites. Well, there's, 32 first-round games. In this, there's not. There's only four.
And you always got to pick the 12 over 5. There's got to be a 12 over 5.
I did not take the 12 over 5. I took SMU over Penn State. And I didn't just do it just to pick an upset. I really think it can happen. They have a very good offense. Kevin Jennings is a really good quarterback. Penn State's defense, I know Oregon's probably better than SMU, but Penn State just got lit up by Oregon. It was probably 2 or 3 months ago, but I remember watching the Bowling Green Penn State game. Bowling Green gave Penn State's offense, defense fits in the first half. I really think they'll be able to move the ball. And while home games are great in the playoff, I think we might see if a favorite, and it could be working Tennessee, Ohio State's favor, in Tennessee's favor. I think if a favorite, a home team is struggling early, you get that nervous energy in the building, and Penn State fans like, it's, you know, we're losing to SMU. What's going on here? And I think it can, you know, James Franklin obviously well documented his record in big games and all that stuff. So I think being the road team might play to SMU's advantage. I wouldn't be surprised if they won that game.
Now, which game is the most intriguing to you in that first round, those first round matchups? I look at the Indiana and Notre Dame game. That's an intriguing game to me. I know many people look at it and say Indiana didn't play anyone. When they did, they end up losing, and I understand it. But that game, if you watched it, it was probably a little bit tighter than what the score indicated. There were some special teams things that happened and whatnot, but I still believe Indiana is a damn good team. But people just automatically think that, oh, they're going to lose to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think there's two. The Ohio State-Tennessee game, I think, for obvious reasons, just two great programs. But I will go back to that game you just referenced. I'm interested to see Indiana in its like kind of second opportunity in a big game. Like they failed is a strong word, but they failed in their first opportunity against Ohio State. Notre Dame had a great run after the Northern Illinois game. Statistically, I think they lead the nation in total offense and total defense, maybe, or scoring offense and scoring defense, something like that since that game. But the schedule hasn't been great. And the USC with its backup quarterback, I know he beat out Miller Moss, but they moved the ball. They had some success moving the ball against Notre Dame. So, and Indiana's offense is very good. So I would pick Notre Dame here, but would not be surprised at all if Indiana really made them sweat. And I just think it's cool, too. You got two teams from the state of Indiana playing.
Exactly. What do you think of Indiana's quarterback?
I like him. I mean, his brother, Nathan Rourke, was a really good quarterback at Ohio before him. And, you know, he's had a good career. He got hurt 2 years ago. Took a while to come back. But, you know, that was a very good job of evaluating in the portal and picking a guy who they thought would be good for his system. I think when healthy, he's been very good this year.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. We're talking college football and the bracket. So, Mitch, philosophically, I understand why they have the bracket the way it is. They had to start somewhere with the 12 teams. But after what you see now, and you just were talking about some of the things you can poke holes in, Boise State getting a bye, Penn State looking like they might have an easier pathway to the semifinal than Oregon, arguably. Do you think that they will next year reconsider the reward for winning the conference, especially in these huge conferences where not everybody plays even, you know, basically play half the teams in these leagues? So what does it really mean to win the conference? The suggestion was made by the panel of just seeding them 1 through 12 and not seeding them by league champion. What do you do? You think they will make that decision at some point?
Yeah, I do. I think that's. I think it was in theory a good idea what they did, but this idea was crafted when there was five power leagues before the demise of the Pac-12. So it wasn't such a Big Two and other two type thing. So I don't think this scenario was really, they could envision this scenario where you have, and no knock to Arizona State and Boise State, but two weaker teams than some other of the at-large teams. So I think that's a reason we're seeing this. But I totally agree. I think winning your league and getting in is reward enough, but that they should honor the best, just go 1 through 12 and see that way. I think it will eventually go that way. I should know this. I think they can change the form of the teams after 2 years. I don't know if they're locked into this format for next year. Again, I should know that. They might be, but if not, I think they will change it.
This is the point that Nick Saban made repeatedly.
Repeatedly, yes.
Yes. Well, and this was one detail that I thought was a very good point. If you are going to put a bracket up every week in the weeks leading up to the actual bracket, just like Joe Lunardi does, he does every day, basically.
He does bracketology during the offseason.
I've watched him do it. I do my own research for that, et cetera, as everybody knows that's listened to me for a long time. But this is why I don't put the brackets up. I don't make a bracket when I'm looking at who's going to be in, because if you are going to put pencil in a league champion, then that takes up a spot. But we know, everybody knows that when you put that bracket up, it's not set in stone because that team has to win the league. So Nick Saban's point that SMU was ranked higher than they should have been because you had to put a team down. You put the leader of the SEC in the bracket when they had to obviously win the game to get in. So SMU was like, well, you ranked us eighth, so you're penalizing us if we lose this championship game. But Nick Saban was like, they really weren't the eighth-ranked team going in, but they were holding a spot on that board because they were leading the conference. I would suggest to the committee, if it were me, and they're not going to listen to me, they don't have my phone number or anything. Mitch, maybe you could give it to them if anybody wants.
Yes, I will.
My suggestion would be, don't put a bracket up. Just rank the teams 1 through 12 in the league in the weeks leading up to the actual bracket. There's no need to put a bracket up there. And that might have changed their thinking on SMU.
Okay. I think I can poke holes in both those. I mean, if you put
do
the
it.
Rankings up, everyone knows how it works. So they can just make their own bracket. Like, that's what we would do with The Athletic. We run every week. If you rank the 12 teams, I know that if you've got SMU the highest, you're projecting them to win. And I think if I understood your point and Saban's point correctly, that's not really what they did. They had SMU ranked 7 or wherever because they thought they were the 7th best team. They had Arizona State and Iowa State ranked like 15 and 16 heading into championship weekend. They didn't rank them artificially high to get them in the bracket. They didn't need to. The champion of that league gets into the bracket. So heading into conference championship week, they had Arizona State 15 and Iowa State 16 or vice versa. And then Arizona State looked really good, and they moved them up to 12. They didn't move them up to 12 to get them in the bracket. They moved them up to 12 because they're the 12th best team. They would be in the bracket if they were ranked 14th still. So if I'm, again, interpreting it correctly, I think that has nothing to do with it.
Well, I guess then I will pin you down on why did the committee think that SMU was ranked deserving of the 8th ranking when they had not beaten a top 25 team?
Same philosophy with Indiana. They just thought, I mean, I'm not being a wise, they just thought they were the 7th best team. I'm not saying I agree with it, but they, it's very difficult to rank those teams this year because of those unbalanced schedules that you mentioned. The SMU did not play Clemson. They did not play Miami. They did not play some of the top teams
Syracuse
in the league there. So,
did not play Syracuse.
Syracuse. I'm not saying it was right or wrong, but they had them ranked 7th because that's where they came up with their rankings. Like, in the whole, we even wrote about this. It's never going to happen. And say, they're not going to stop doing the weekly show because it makes a lot of money and people like go crazy talking about the rankings. I've been on your show for the last 5 weeks. All we do is talk about the rankings. So I don't think they contrived anything with SMU because, again, if they were contriving things, they would have had the projected Big 12 winner in the top 12, which they did not do until after the championship weekend.
Okay, so in general, I believe that Nick Saban has some really good points, and he will be penalized, I think, in how those points go over because of where he sits with Alabama. And people are just going to say, well, he's giving Alabama's case. But I think he has some very good points, especially when we look at the perspective of how the basketball tournament is selected, that I do think that committee does need to sort of rethink how they do their process.
Yeah, I think it boiled down to SMU. If they were 11 and if they had two losses, it did not reach the championship game. Now that's a different thing because they would be third in their league. So again, that's a different point. I think it just boiled down to them having a fine showing and not wanting to be penalized for that. And I get the Alabama. I'm with you. I mean, I think the SEC is clearly the best league. It's the deepest league. And I know this argument doesn't really, a lot of people don't want to hear it. But don't lose to Oklahoma 24-3 when you know you're playing for your playoff life. And then Oklahoma, it's not like they were playing great late season. You know, last game of the year, I forgot where they go. They went down to – they got beat bad the last game of the year. I forgot who they played. But so it's not like you lost to a red-hot Oklahoma team.
Yeah.
And you know what's at stake. Don't lose a third game. I mean, it's easy for me to say that, but that's kind of, you know. So I have no – obviously, you can tell, I have no problem with the committee's decision to put SMU in over Alabama.
The getting beat bad by Oklahoma, that was a factor. Yeah. If it was a 27 freaky double overtime game, that might have been a little bit different. So
right, you can't look at that. You can't look at that Alabama Oklahoma game late in the year and say, "Wow, this team. I don't care. This team deserves to be in. I don't care what else has happened the rest of the year." If you're looking for a reason to leave them out of the field, you can point to that game.
All right, real quick, thoughts on the Georgia Tech Vanderbilt matchup, what can be accomplished for Vanderbilt? A lot of people, you look at this, they'd be 6-7. That happened a couple times under Derek Mason.
Yeah.
It looks better when it says 7-6 and not 6-7, even though getting to a bowl game was a huge accomplishment. But we also know that in today's bowl games, there's all kinds of X factors with people opting out, going into the portal, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's very big for the reasons you stated. There's a huge difference between 7-6 and 6-7. You don't want to lose end the season with four straight losses. I mean, big picture, should it take away from the things they accomplished? No. But again, there's a huge difference. I heard Clark Lee in an interview said, we want to put a bowl trophy there. So I think you'll get a very motivated team, Vanderbilt team. And it's a fun game. I mean, both teams have fun offenses. Haynes King, assuming he plays, I think there's been some portal rumors with him, but I'm not buying it. I mean, you know, maybe I'll look at Twitter right after this and he's in the portal. I don't know. But, two really fun quarterbacks, and Georgia Tech has been good all year. The one thing that Vanderbilt has going for them, Georgia Tech plays really well against ranked opponents. I mean, look at Brent Key's record against ranked opponents versus unranked opponents. It's like almost better versus ranked opponents. So I'm half kidding there. But, really fun matchup. Both schools about two and a half, 3 hours away from Birmingham, so it should be a fun game.
Quickly, before we get you out of here, Mitch, because of the season Vandy had, did you see any bump with their recruiting?
Not really, because in today's climate, or it's been this way for probably about 5-6 years, mm-hmm. most schools have all their commitments in June. You know, that's when the official visits are. Most kid commitments are before the season started. I said this, I think we might have talked a couple weeks ago. Like Indiana had 23 commitments before they played their first game this year. Mm-hmm. So they weren't really, you know, it's usually the next year. You capitalize after showing the product on the field with the next year's class. Where it should help for them is in the portal. There's mm-hmm. proof of concept. You can't just sell them on a vision. You can say, hey, look, we won 3 SEC games. We beat Alabama. So I'd expect their portal class to be better, while the recruiting class was just similar to what it's been in recent years.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Mitch, well,
hey, one more thing, guys. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Willie, if you want to take this offline and keep arguing, you know where to find me. Just give me a call.
Yes. I might just do that.
I'm here. Bring it on.
Are you familiar, Mitch, with the Rocks for Jocks class that Willie allegedly
had in school? Well, what was
it? At Vanderbilt. I've never heard of such a thing. maybe that's why I was never in the same class with Willie.
Mitch challenged himself a little more academically, apparently, than I did.
Hey, look where I am, look where you are. So, okay.
Mitch, always a pleasure. Talk next week. Right, Mitch Light joining us from The Athletic. No rocks for jocks for Mitch. He didn't get
perhaps picked. He took the physics for poets class out there for English majors.
Maybe
that
he
just
did.
Needed to get the science credit.
I never heard of that class. Did they, okay, this may be a dumb question, but I've never heard of that class in my life. But I heard a class like, all right, if you want an easy class, just take this class. You know.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, they're all they get the nicknames for it.
Never had the nickname.
Yeah.
I mean, I was not a collegiate athlete like the two of you, so I don't know.
The classic, though, is when you think it sounds like an easy class, and then you get in there like, whoa. I had one person at Vanderbilt tell me, I signed up for astrology. And they were thinking astronomy, like, hey, we're going to go out, we're going to look at the stars, we're going to check out, we're going to learn the constellations and where everything is, you know. And he got in there, it was all physics and math. He was like, wait a minute, where's the planetarium? Where's the field trip? He was out of there. He was out of there after 2 weeks. Man. He goes, I'm dropping this class, man. This
I'm surprised he lasted 2 weeks.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears to the Predators. I had an opportunity. I love when I'm able to come here because I have an opportunity to talk to the players and Andrew Brunette before our show. I asked Andrew Brunette a question that I've been wanting to ask him for quite some time. We'll play that coming up next. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Finkin, 1025, 1063, the game.
Yeah! Kick it!
D-Mace, Finkin, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Finkin, live from Bridgestone Arena. The Predators make a quick pit stop at home to host the Flames tonight. Pre-game starts at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Barry Trotz will join Jarrett Stillman for his weekly conversation at 5 o'clock, so be sure to tune in for that. So one thing I like about coming to the rink on home game days is I have an opportunity to be around the team, which I don't have as much time to do because our show is off and on when they're practicing. So it gives me an opportunity to ask questions of players and of Andrew Brunette. So one thing that I have talked about a lot when it comes to this team, one thing that we talked about Brian Callahan earlier and, you know, the shift in tone and all of those things. But one thing that I've talked a lot about with Brunette, something that I disagree with him on, is it feels like from afar, I emphasize that, from afar, it feels like he is not holding his top players accountable for their poor performances. So today, they had a meeting. They did not skate because they practiced yesterday. Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean started off the news conference asking about the idea of, you know, have you thought about it scratching any of your top players as they've been struggling? I followed up. Here is what I asked Andrew Brunette, and here was his response.
In that situation, I understand that top players tend to have longer leashes than depth players, but do you worry about any sense of inequality? For example, I remember Michael McCarron had a turnover in a game against Edmonton back in October that led to a goal by Leon Draisaitl, and if I'm not mistaken, he was scratched for a game or a couple games after that. Jonathan Marchessault has had multiple turnovers that I can recall, including in Montreal, that led to a shorthanded goal against, but yet he hasn't seen any reduction in his playing time. Do you worry about the inequality there?
I think you always worry. You know, I think players see it. Players see through a lot of different things. You know, with Marchie, I think you're trying to, you know, be patient with him. You're trying to make him feel comfortable. You're trying to find solutions for him because we're going to need him. You know, with Big Mac, yeah, I'm sure he looks at that saying, well, what happened to me? But Big Mac's game, I think he was minus 10 at the time too. And, you know, unfortunately, like I said, I could scratch every guy in the team. And is there going to come a time? There might. But I think with saying that, I think everybody wants to be held accountable. Everybody wants that, but they don't like it when they're held accountable. And, you know, that's where it gets tricky. And when you got a whole team that's probably not playing up to their capabilities or up to the expectations, it's easy to have that excuse. Well, how come he's not getting it? And my point to them is, how about you play better?
That was Andrew Brunette to me earlier this morning. I don't know if either of you had heard that before we played it. What were your thoughts on his response?
Oh, wow. I mean, he was honest and upfront about it. But he was also right when he said, listen, yeah, I understand it can you know, cause a divide. That's where, you know, you have to be fair and you have to be, you got to know your locker room, but you also got to be fair to the locker room. Like, okay, if this guy messed up and it's been something repeatedly over and over again, then yes, I have to do something to sort of get his attention. But you can't then look at someone else and say after his, you know, 3, 4, 5 mistakes, say, oh, no, we're just still trying to work him in. Well, what about the guy that did make a mistake? Isn't he trying to find himself now with the new guys as well? So you're going to give the new guys a pass, but not the guys that were here. And it might be harder for them to adjust to the new guys than the new guys to adjust to them. So if you're going to get passed to one, maybe you should get passed to the other. Or if you're going to take some ice time, again, I never said scratch a guy. But if you're going to take away ice time for one, you need to take away ice time for the other. So that, listen, everybody is held accountable for their play. Yes, you told the other guy, hey, listen, worry about yourself, play better. But human nature kicks in. Like, okay, you are right, coach. I do need to play better. But if this guy is steady doing the same things that he has been doing all season, when do you tell him he needs to play better?
This is, I think, a couple of dilemmas that I'm seeing with that. Number one, as we talked about with the Titans, Andrew Burnett, I think, has presented himself from day one as a player's coach. He said, I remember the first interview I did with him when he got the job. He said, I think I can relate to players because I've been a player that's been on top lines. Mm-hmm. I've been a player who's been the 13th forward who is ticked off that he's not in the lineup. And I've been the third, fourth line grinder. Mm-hmm. I've been on good teams. I've been on terrible teams. So he can relate to every situation a team has been in. But I think he has tried to say, I'm not going to be Mr. Fire Brimstone, you know, they call it the bag skate, right? When you don't play well, you're going to practice extra and we're going to do sprints. You know, that's just never how he's been, and he's trying to be true to himself. So he hasn't started down the path of yanking people's playing time, especially veteran players who he knows he's got to have. So to change would be to go against a little bit of his philosophy, number one. Number two, if he did want to do it, I think the dilemma is nobody's playing well. So who are you elevating? You're elevating somebody else who has struggled, right? So if you're going to – let's take the example you said. If you're going to bench Marchessault, who do you elevate? You're elevating Tommy Novak or Luke Evangelista. Those guys have struggled. So that's the tough thing. And so I think it's got to be really tough for Brunet, because he's probably looking at the veteran guys, especially Marchessault. Mm-hmm. Stan goes, look, I have backed you guys. I could bench you. Maybe I should have benched you. But where is you got to give me something back here. Reward me. Like, show where's your fight for me? I'm taking all this heat for not benching you guys, but you guys, I've shown patience with you. Reward me for my patience somewhere in here. And that's where a little bit that last part is. How about playing better? Because I think in this town, this is just how I observe Nashville as a sport, the fans, the media tend to gravitate towards the coach disproportionately to the accountability for the player. Jonathan Marchessault, Steven Stamkos, you could go down the road. Nobody's having a good year. But I don't hear people calling in going, what's wrong with Marchessault? It's all, hey, should they fire Andrew Brunette?
Yeah.
That's 90% of it. Or they pick on a guy like Michael McCarron or Cole Smith. And to me, that's not where the team is winning and losing. When your top guys are having lousy seasons, that is where you're going to sink or swim. It's not all on the coach to go out and make the plays. Well, when you say, hey, who am I playing with? I'm not playing with this guy or that guy. That's what Marshall's always saying.
And we'll talk about comments.
But you're the guy that scored 40 goals. You're supposed to be driving the other guys to somebody. I could see if he was doing okay, but he's not pulling his weight. I want to hear more accountability from the star guy saying, I got to do better.
Well, it goes to, listen, when you tell a one guy you need to be playing better, the minute you say that, you turn guys off. They may agree with you, and they may think in their head, yeah, he's right. But why isn't he telling that top guy he needs to play better? He's taking away my ice time of scratching me, and then tell me if I do bring up, well, you're not. It's not the same treatment across the board. And you tell me, well, you just play better. Well, you've lost them now. You've completely lost them. Where in actuality, you should be telling a top line guy, hey, you need to be playing better because we brought you here because we felt you could change our fortunes, and you're not doing it. I gave you grace period. That grace period is over. Now I need to start holding y'all feet to the fire. And he didn't rule it out that he wouldn't. But when you don't do those things early on, what do people tend to do? They go to the head coach. Well, this is your deal. You running it, and the guys are not playing well, and they don't seem like you're holding anybody accountable. So maybe we should just ask if your job should be questioned. Because you're not doing the things necessary to hold those guys, especially your top guys that are not playing well, you're not holding those guys accountable.
Yeah, and Willie, I can't speak to how other markets cover their teams just because this is the market that I've been in for almost 10 years, and I can't recall exactly how it was when I was in Washington. But it is, I mean, the coach is always the scapegoat, the easiest scapegoat because it's the easiest change to make, right? Mm-hmm. You're not firing Jonathan Marchessault. He's signed a 5-year contract. Contracts in the NHL are guaranteed. You can't cut a guy like you can in the NFL with time on his contract. I mean, you could buy him out, but you know that's a little bit more complicated. You know, I see it as, you know, when we were talking about this last week with specifically Stamkos and Marchessault, we know that they're not bad players. We have plenty of evidence to suggest that they're not bad players. Steven Stamkos, when he hangs up his skates one day, you might as well just put his placard in the Hockey Hall of Fame, not the NHL Hall of Fame. You should put his placard in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Marchessault has won the Conn Smythe Trophy as playoff MVP. That is an illustrious award. His name is on the Stanley Cup, as is Steven Stamkos, as a couple of times. I think where it falls with Brunette in this conversation is when we see those players, and that's the same. It's the sort of the thing we talked about last week with how all of these players are having down seasons. I think it would be easier to place the blame on the players if one or two players out of the larger group were having issues. It's across the board. Forsberg isn't having his normal type season. Before Ryan O'Reilly was injured, he wasn't having a season as compared to last season. Gus Nyquist, Stamkos, Marchessault,
right. It's you don't have to name everybody. It's right. Everybody
right.
On the team.
And that, to me, speaks more to a putting more emphasis on the coach than the player when it's across the board that these things are happening versus an isolated
I guess I would
incident.
Ask you why. Because if Andrew Brunette was in his first year as the coach, and then I could maybe say, well, okay, it's the new coach. But last year, it was the complete opposite. With most of these players, they thrived in this system, which is the way he wants to play. And so I would ask, why is it his fault if it's the same way he's been teaching it from
it's not
last year?
All, to be clear, it's not all his
right.
fault. I'm just
right.
saying
I,
that.
I think I that's where I'm not saying he's not to blame at all.
Right.
Right. I'm not absolving him. I just think it should be spread around a little bit more, including Barry Trotz. And I think he said this to Jared last week. He goes, you know, I made the call to bring in established, I think he called them legacy players.
Yes.
Right. The serial winners that he thought would be able to adapt. It's clear that they have not adapted to the system. The system has had to be tweaked.
And I will give Brunette credit for doing that,
by the way. And he hasn't really been given much of a choice. But I do think deep down, Andrew Brunette has a vision of how he wants his teams to play. And I'm not sure the guys that were brought in to add to what was a good formula last year have been able or willing to play that kind of system. And that's a key question is, are they not able to play or they just don't like playing that way?
It's twofold quickly. It's, okay, you bring these guys in and the guys that were there in the previous year, they found out a way. They found out how to play within the system. And now you add these new guys and things are not going the way that you expected them to go. And then all of a sudden, now you tweak the system a little bit more. Now you might have tweaked it out of helping the guys that were already trenched into that system that you were teaching. And they know sort of the ins and outs of it, and they feel comfortable in how you're calling and what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, you bring in these three or four new guys, and you keep it that way for a minute, but then you find out, well, they're not meshing in this system well, so let me change it a little bit more. Well, you might have hurt the majority to try to appease, you know, three or four guys. Now, hey, listen, you paid those three or four guys a lot of money, and you may have to do it, but you may have to understand that because I changed it some, now instead of helping, now what I did to help a few has hurt many.
615-737-1025. Jonathan Marchessault, speaking of Marchessault, had some interesting comments last week. We will discuss those next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up at 2 o'clock. Barry Trotz joins Jared at 5 o'clock. Speaking of Barry Trotz, David is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com with a Predators comment. David, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
How you doing, Derek? Donick?
Hey.
Look, I just don't think everybody's getting the point. Rand Carthon came in here. He didn't address the offensive line the way he should have at all. Why are you worrying about somebody catching the ball if you can't block the guy who's throwing it? Come on. And then Barry Trotz was here for 16 years. He never really did that much for us. Got us in the playoffs and went home. I mean, then you bring him back as a GM. How's that working out? You threw away a lot of good players that are playing on top-notch teams, on other teams on their top lines. And we're going down the drain. I don't have any faith in Barry Trotz. I'm glad some people do, but it won't be me. And Rand Carthon, his draft picks are terrible for the last 2 years, not helping.
Thank you for the call, David. So let's talk about the Barry Trotz.
Yes.
So let's talk about the major moves that Barry Trotz has made since he became GM. So I'm not going to include his role in the sell-off with Matias Ekholm and Nino Niederreiter and Mikael Granlund and Tanner Janot. I would say his first official act was trading Ryan Johansson. Mm-hmm. That's worked out pretty well, right? Now, Matt Duchene has been a high-scoring player for the Dallas Stars, but that was less about the production and more about the influence in the dressing room.
And the role that he was playing.
Yes.
As opposed to the role he's playing on Dallas, where he is more a depth skill guy
versus being the man
making $3 million,
right,
as opposed to being the man
and
counted on for everything, making $8 million,
right?
So I don't think anybody would want to do over on that. Very few, I think.
Right. Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist were the two highest scoring players in the NHL last season who joined new teams. They were great last season, O'Reilly and Nyquist. They far exceeded expectations from an individual perspective. Has it worked out this season with the free agent signings yet? No, it definitely hasn't. And one thing that I'm sure Jared will ask Barry Trotz, because it is an interesting question, is this idea that they waived Dante Fabbro and he goes to Columbus. He's getting a lot more ice time. He's making the most of that ice time. Philip Tomasino gets traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's playing on the line with a future Hall of Famer in Evgeny Malkin. He's making the most of his opportunities. So it's easy to see that from afar and say, wait a minute. Philip Tomasino couldn't even crack this lineup, and now he's going to Pittsburgh, and he's putting up points every game. It is a nuanced conversation, and I'm sure Jared will ask Barry about it later today. But has Barry Trotz's moves so far this season panned out? No. No, they have not.
I can't disagree with that at all. I think I would have to say with the Tomasino and Fabbro, I'm glad for those guys. That happens around the league a lot.
How many chances did they get here to play those roles? Like, I think Tomasino, for example, he was drafted by David Poile. He made his NHL debut under John Hines. He was here for Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett, and he couldn't get the most out of his opportunities for himself despite having multiple people giving him those opportunities. It just didn't work out here.
These are maybe Tomasino will turn into a star player. Maybe. I don't know. I'd be happy for him if he did. But good for him. They weren't in this position they're in now because they weren't playing Favreau more or not playing Tomasino more. In my opinion, the way, way bigger issue is why isn't Stamkos playing better? Why isn't Marchessault playing better? What happened to all the guys that thrived last year? O'Reilly, Nyquist, why have they dropped off? Why has Novak dropped off? That's 95% of everything. If you want to nitpick on Favreau and Tomasino, okay, whatever, but that's nothing compared to the issues that they're dealing with.
We have to be careful when we try to do the comparison. Well, this guy, you had him, and you shipped him away or cut him, and look what he's doing at other organizations. Listen, that's a hard thing to try to foresee. Especially when you've given a guy or guys every opportunity to show you they can play. And for whatever reason, they just don't show you they can play within your system, within your organization, and you have no other recourse but to move on for them. You wish them well anywhere else, but you have to move on from them and get someone that can do the things that you're asking them to do. And that person may go on to have a stellar career somewhere else, but I am not going to continue to look at, well, they should have kept this guy. Well, they kept him long enough, and they gave him every opportunity. It just didn't work, so we can't penalize him. I can see if they had never gave these guys any chance, and then they just traded them away, and then lo and behold, they become great players. It's like you didn't even get our guy an opportunity, and look what he became. But you've given these guys opportunities, and they just didn't show it. So when you move on from them, you wish them luck, but you can't keep going back to that and say, well, look at what these guys are doing for other teams. I've seen guys play well at one place and then go to another place and they don't play at all. I've seen guys not be able to touch the field for whatever reason and they go somewhere else and they thrive. It's just how sports is at times.
CC on our text line says, Favreau had 5 years and Tomasino had 140-plus games with the Predators. How long was the organization supposed to give that?
Yeah. And I think that's part of it is their contract situations. Mm-hmm. The time was ticking. I thought they were going to trade Favreau a couple years ago, and if they did, I don't think anybody would have been clamoring, oh my gosh, what are you thinking trading Favreau? He just became a guy who played for a long time in the league. He's a good player. He didn't live up to the reputation of great defensemen that the Predators have developed. He wasn't quite that, but he's a good, solid NHL player, but he's at the stage of his career where you got to pay him more to keep him, and they have other guys that could give him sort of the same thing that he was giving them for a lot less money. The Tomasino thing, if they wanted to not trade him, they would have had to waive him like Tolvanen, and somebody would have grabbed him for nothing. And they felt like the other prospects were better off as the guys that got the next chance, like a Svechkov and some of these other guys that I think in the coming weeks, if it doesn't turn, Barry Trotz has referenced, you're going to start seeing Reed Schaefer, you're going to start seeing Joachim Kemmel, guys who they've been pretty high on for a while. They've already started to elevate Zach LaRue.
Well, we got about 2 weeks here.
Yeah, they've already started to elevate Zach LaRue up in the lineup to give him some more ice time.
They have seven more games
until
the Christmas break.
But the players on the ice they are what they are. I don't. There's a ton of questions as to why they've struggled, but they have struggled mightily, and we'll see if it happens tonight. But they're running out of time saying, oh, we'll just turn it around. We'll be all right. They've dug such a hole, it's going to take something with a lot of force to start happening that we haven't seen so far.
Predators and Flames tonight. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3 the game. The Predators looking to break their 7-game winless streak, their longest in more than 11 years. We'll see if they can do that against the Flames tonight. Stillman & Company coming up next right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful, blessed, and safe Tuesday. Peace.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.